Welcome, believers. This is Lucha Lowdown. I am your host, El Jefe, of this podcast, James Kincaid. With me tonight, as always, El Guapo Jeff Budd.
And now, James, a Merry Christmas to you and a Merry Christmas to the listeners.
Yes, I was waiting for you to say it. A Merry Christmas to all you believers out there. And we'll be doing another one before New Year's, so I will withhold my Happy New Year. But Merry Christmas to all the believers out there. Thank you, El Guapo. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. I'm glad you mentioned the New Year thing, because I almost said Happy New Year, and I would have had to take
Happy
that back.
Happy New Year, pal.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
He's actually still wishing us a Happy New Year.
He is. You know, I really wanted to have a Christmas sweater of that made, or a New Year's sweater, I guess, but I have to wait again till for another year to get that done. But welcome back to Lucha Lowdown. Hope you all are going to get all the, luchador masks and all the wrestling apparel you want for Christmas this year. We got a couple of things that I want to talk about before we actually get down into break down the episode this week. And that is a couple of news items and one really fun story slash video that came out. First of all, I guess we'll start with Johnny Mundo. Uproxx got their hands on an exclusive first look at the music video that is set to Johnny Mundo's new theme, Welcome to Slamtown. And Jeff, I will point out to you that we actually heard him come out to that at the Lucha En Vivo event when we were down in Escondido. And I thought it was awesome then. And I think this video of him putting it together is excellent as well. It's really funny. What did you think?
I'm probably going to be saying this later again tonight, but boy, Mundo has really just found himself with this heel character. As a fan of his for years, and I know you have been too since his time in the WWE, it's really just, I'm really happy for him, and I'm excited to see what he does next. This video was hilarious. I like the part where he asked him to stop moving because he was being distracting, and he goes, you know, if it was a mirror, it'd be fine, but it's a window.
It's you.
Yeah. But no, I loved it. It fits his character perfectly. I did not notice that he had come out to that song in Escondido. Thanks for pointing that out. But yeah, I don't know. It just fits him perfectly. He does well.
You're too starstruck.
Probably. He's as perfect looking in person as he is on TV.
Dude, I'd say, dare I say, even more so. And I still think back about him looking right at me and just posing when he saw I was going to take a photo of that. That was incredible. So, and you're right.
He lives the character.
Johnny Mundo has really found himself in Lucha Underground. He has been given every opportunity to shine and really just thrive as a character. And we've talked about this before. I think we even talked about when we were reviewing the live event, just how comfortable he is within his own skin in Lucha Underground. And, you know, when he was in WWE, when he was paired with The Miz, I thought they both were really entertaining. I love that tag team. I love their vignette segments. And when they feuded, it was also good. But then something happened after that where, like, it felt like almost they took part of him away. They, like, cut him off at the knees, you know, and all of a sudden he wasn't getting to cut these charismatic promos or anything like that. And I think he got kind of the rep that, he's good in the ring, but he's not really the total package. And that couldn't be further from the truth. He really is the whole deal in wrestling. I mean, he's got it going on with the physique, his character, his entrance, and he is great on the mic. He is oozing charisma that I don't know why they didn't let that come out more consistently in WWE, but it's great to see him doing it in this video and in Lucha Underground. I love the part where when he finishes up, he's just like, you know, the director's, you know, maybe we should do another take. He's like, when you're done painting the Mona Lisa, you put the paintbrush down. You don't want to overpaint. And I thought that was great. One of the other things that I loved about that Johnny Mundo video is him playing all the different musical instruments throughout it. You know, the accordion, like the freaking cello, the violin. That was hysterical.
Dude, because he's Mundo, man.
He can do it all. He can do it all.
He's the Renaissance man.
Yeah, more of a Picasso than Van Gogh.
Van Gogh.
And I don't know, I kind of wonder, is he channeling a little bit of his inner Shawn Michaels and singing his own theme song? I would venture to guess that that probably has something to do with it. Not saying that that's the only reason, but there is a certain, trend that Sean, I feel like, set with that he did in wrestling, and it has been his theme for so long now that maybe Mundo is trying to do the same thing. Your thoughts?
Well, nothing wrong with emulating a legend like HBK, so I think he's in good company if that's the case.
Yeah, especially when you can work as well as Mundo does, a la HBK did. But yeah, that was very cool. Check it out on UpRocks, or you can find it on our Facebook feed or Twitter feed at Lucha Lowdown, and check out the video there. We would appreciate it. And thanks to UpRocks for putting that out there. It was hilarious. Other news is that this is via 411 Mania, and according to their sources at CableFax, the El Rey Network is planning to increase the output of Lucha Underground and From Dusk Till Dawn. And the network apparently is planning to go up by 50% or upwards for Lucha Underground Season 4. This season's already 40 episodes, which means we'd be probably getting somewhere around 60 episodes or more from Season 4. Now, again, this is not confirmed. This is still just, I think, floating around in the ether as a rumor. But what do you think of when you hear this news?
Well, when you first told me about it and I was reading the article, it seemed a little strange that we would be getting that much Lucha. But then, as you and I discussed, growing up as wrestling fans, we're used to year-round wrestling. So to get Lucha Underground as a weekly interval, I mean, it doesn't seem like it's it doesn't seem like it's that bad of an idea.
Yeah, I like
the season storytelling, though. There's something about Lucha Underground that you don't get with the WWE or other promotions, and it does, you know, it kind of tells this full story, and then we get a little bit of a break, and it makes it more like other kinds of TV shows. So I don't know. We'll have to see how it works. I still think you could keep it a shorter amount of episodes and really make them 90-minute episodes. That's what I think would be ideal, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you that when I first saw the news, I mean, I was immediately, I was like, yes, the more the better, Lucha all the time. And then as I thought about it more, I was like, you know, I do really like the fact that they will end a season on a cliffhanger and things like that. And we do get that break to sort of be like, man, what's going to happen next? I can't wait for Lucha Underground to come back. I think that's a powerful thing. And I think it's something that wrestling has missed out on because it is year round, but that building of anticipation and just waiting and wanting more is a powerful motivator to keep the fans coming back. So I would hate to see them lose that because it is unique to them. But I mean, it's obviously going to be great Lucha Underground content, so I really can't complain too much. I would also hesitate to see them move it to 90 minutes because the hour moves so fast that it is, again, that sort of like comedian, don't overdo your set, you know, leave on a high note, leave them wanting more, because I'm always eager to tune back in next week. So I don't want to see them overdo it there either, but it would be interesting. But I think they have the formula down so well right now. Of course, we've not gotten through season 3, which is the first 40 episode season, so we'll see how that goes. That feels honestly like pretty perfect, because you know, if all goes according to plan, then you only have like a whatever 12 to however many week break, if that became sort of the routine. And that feels just about right. You know, you go a few months without it, and then bam, you're right back into it again. So that's kind of where I come down on. Although, I mean, it's exciting because it's a positive, because it means Lucha Underground is doing well. It is the flagship of the El Rey Network, and that is sort of the other side of that unique coin that they are on, is that it is a TV show, not just a wrestling promotion. And TV shows get, you know, the plug pulled on them sometimes out of nowhere. So that is something we definitely don't want to see happen. So it sounds like things are going well at El Rey Network for Lucha Underground, which I'm very happy about. The other bit of news with that, though, is that season 4 likely to start taping in October. Jeff, what are you doing? Clear your schedule, because I'm going to try my best to clear mine and go to as many of those as possible.
I'm going to be attending Lucha Underground tapings.
Excellent. Excellent. How stoked are you?
Scale 1 to 10. I don't know, 8, 9.
I'm certified 20 over here, so one upping you again.
I was thinking it's like that Mundo video, and it's like, Jeff, right now you're a 9, you know, it's like, I'm a 10. I need all of you to come meet me here at 10.
Yeah. You bring what I'm bringing, you know? But yeah, can't wait for the tapings in October. That's going to be a lot of fun. Going to go to as many of those as possible, but yeah, that does it for the sort of, new business. Before we get into the rest of tonight's episode, I want to take care of a little business, and that is to remind you all that we love hearing from you. We love interacting with you, so we certainly would appreciate if you follow us on Twitter, at Lucha Lowdown. Find us on Facebook. If you want to email us, luchalowdown@gmail.com, if you want to interact with us. We love hearing from all the believers. It's been great so far. But most importantly, subscribe to us on iTunes and Audio Boom. And on iTunes, please rate and review us. It is the best way you can help us with the podcast at this point. We really appreciate it. Thank you all for doing that. It is the best Christmas gift you could give to us at the Lowdown. We hope you've been enjoying the episodes as much as we have been doing them. Merry Christmas, everybody. And now back to the rest of the show. Let's jump into this week's episode, which was Battle of the Bulls. Overall, what did you think?
I liked the matches this week. I liked one of the vignettes very much. I thought the Battle of the Bulls match held up compared to all the anticipation after the past two episodes of the build-up with the tournament. So, yeah, I mean, it was a good conclusion to that.
I really enjoyed all the vignettes from this week quite a lot. I thought they really sort of stole the show for me because they're all stories I'm very interested in, the two main vignettes anyway. And I liked the Battle of the Bulls finale. I thought it kind of lost a little bit of steam in the second half of it. It ended very sort of more abruptly after sort of a drawn out beginning part of it. But I still enjoyed it. I liked the cage match quite a bit. In particular, the finish I thought was one of the most pitch perfect ones we've gotten just in wrestling in general, as far as playing off both characters. I thought it was very well done. So I enjoyed this episode, but starting with the Battle of the Bulls finale, which is what we got Mac versus PJ Black versus Jeremiah Crane versus Cage. And I would like to point out that in the last episode, Jeff and I each picked our avatar as far as who we thought was going to win the Battle of the Bulls. Jeff, you picked Cage. I picked the Mac. How did that go?
Listen, I'm not one to dwell on the past. ever onward, that's what I say.
I was thinking about you when I was watching it because, as I said last week, I was like, man, you know, if we were in Vegas, I think that I would have the, you know, better payout if mine, you know, came up true and yours would have been more like even money, so to speak. Cage got eliminated first, and it was...
Yeah, but it wasn't his fault.
No, it was not. Absolutely not. And it made sense in storyline. It was something I kind of felt like might be coming. Right off the bat, we got some interesting things. Matt Stryker mentioning his grandma having a crush on Vampiro and the fact that she had prescription pills.
Prescription meds.
Yeah. What'd
awesome.
You think of that?
I thought that was great. I didn't pick that up the first time I watched it, but when I watched it again today, I heard that. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, I like that too. That was very funny. And the Vampiro saying that we're going out tonight. So we know what to bring Vampiro when we go to the temple. And then one of the things that I wrote down was Kick Party Part 2 with starring this time Jeremiah Crane and PJ Black. But the vicious strikes that were prevalent in Crane's first match in the Battle of the Bulls tournament were here as well. And then I really liked that they both took each other out with a big kick. I thought
the
that was great.
Simultaneous kicks was great, especially because then the Mac came in. And
yes.
It wasn't right after the simultaneous kicks, but he did try to pin both of them at the same time, which would have been awesome.
Yeah, that was a cool
Except
moment.
It was too early in the match.
Yeah, and it was right before that Vampiro just dropped that right in the nutsack on commentary, which I thought was great. No chill once again from Vampiro, and that's when Mac did that, like they had them stacked on top of each other, and he did the standing moonsault, which. He cleared, but man, that was close. He could have clipped himself on that. That was dangerous. I think Vampire even said, man, that's how you lose an eye or something like that. But that was cool. Some other things that stood out to me from this match, PJ Black's high flying I thought was really well on display. He was really definitely giving off an X-Pac vibe in this match for a lot of it. But I also thought this was a good match for him to kind of show out and everything like that. He's been getting a good run lately, I feel, in Lucha Underground.
He's had three solid episodes. There were some Darewolf howls from the crowd whenever he was doing something, which I thought was cool.
The moment of the match for me was before anyone had gotten eliminated. Mac put Cage up on his shoulders. PJ Black went up top for the Doomsday device.
Yeah, I got that.
And Cage caught PJ Black into a power slam from the electric chair position. That was insane. What did you think?
Yeah, I had that written down. That was one of my favorite moments in the match. Listen, Cage was destroying in the beginning of the match. It was such a great showcase of his strength and talent. He was annihilating everybody left and right. And the brightest flame burns out first, I suppose, because I was like, you know, at this pace, Cage, this match will be wrapped up in a few minutes. And for Cage, it was.
Yeah, it was. Well, it's funny that you say that, because I think even Matt Stryker just emphatically called Cage the Lucha Destroyer at one point, because he was wrecking shop. And as I was watching, I just wrote down in my notes, I was like, man, Cage needs to be champ. He just he deserves
especially
with that.
How the audience erupts for that guy.
Yeah, it just he definitely deserves that honor down the line, or at least get some Aztec gold around his waist here in short order. But yeah, so and right as I wrote it down, man, Cage needs to be champ is when Tejano showed up and led to his elimination right away. So both of us were very high on Cage right before his elimination. So.
Well, and I mean, that's fine because we talked about it. That helps their story. It builds up the rivalry more. It gave something for Tejano to do in this episode. I like Tejano. I like him versus Cage. I still think Cage is going to win that best of five tournament, though, and then be possessed by this god.
Watch this the one time you don't bet on Tejano and he actually pulls it out.
Well, then you know what? I'll be happy to be wrong that time.
Yeah, no, I like Tejano, too, and it made sense because Cage kind of stole one from him in the opening of the Battle of the Bulls tournament, so it made sense that he'd want to get a little bit of revenge. And it, just a couple others.
It's getting past the just best of five, and it's that these two really don't like each other, which is fine. I like that.
Starting to get personal.
Yep, it always does.
More love for Jeremiah Crane, too. I love his moveset. Like the power bomb that he does, that when they kick out, he then turns into the submission, and his finisher is great. Just I really enjoy everything he's doing right now. And then on his finish, even though PJ Black rolled out of the ring, I just like Vampiro saying, "Man, that move, that's the kind of move that'll put your spine through your butthole." That's hilarious. Yeah. But yeah, what do you think about Jeremiah Crane?
I don't think Jeremiah Crane's had a bad match yet. Since he's been here in Lucha, I'm always impressed with him whenever he's in the ring. I find him very entertaining, and I also like his style. I also, it's kind of like what we were talking about, I think it was Aztec Warfare, that, you know, a guy like Marty the Moth can go against Mil Muertes because he's, like, fearless, because he's crazy. I have no problem with a guy like Jeremiah Crane going right after Cage, because Crane also is kind of off.
Yeah.
And kind of has, like, that forceful fight style anyway. Where, like we were talking about his kicks, even though he's not one of the biggest guys, he definitely still has the power behind him. So, I mean, he's the kind of guy that I could see in the ring against just about anybody on the roster, and I'd find it believable. So, nothing but props to him. I'm looking forward to what's going to happen with him next week.
Yeah.
So,
we'll get there in short order. I am fully on the Crane train at this point. Like, when he first showed up again, like you said on last episode, we ship Ivelisse and Son of Havoc. So my sort of ire was automatically raised that this guy was, you know, was Evie's new boyfriend. But he has delivered in the ring, and his character is going in directions that I did not see coming, and I love it. And we're going to get to that more later on in this show. So, yeah, fully on board the Crane train right now. He's awesome. Can't wait to see what happens next with him. Spoiler alert, we'll be rooting for his opponent next week, but I'm looking forward to the match.
I will not be rooting for his opponent next week. I will be rooting for Jeremiah Crane.
You never root for his opponent, it seems. But let's continue on with this Fatal 4-Way Elimination match. So Cage was eliminated, and then we got to see Crane showing out, and then we saw David Arquette in the audience. And I like that they didn't reference him by name. Matt Stryker just said, you know, there's some stars in attendance because, look, I like David Arquette.
Should have said former wrestling champion. In the audience.
See, that's what I didn't want them to say because it leaves a bad taste in my mouth because that was a very bad time at WCW when he was officially their champion. So I appreciated them.
But such an entertaining film.
I love David Arquette. I bought into him and Courtney Cox. I think when he proposes his character Dewey proposes to Gail Weathers in Scream 3, it's a very heartfelt moment that you don't really usually find in horror films. So I appreciated it, and I appreciate his body of work in general. So you know, it was cool to see David Arquette. I'm glad they didn't reference the wrestling aspect of it because it is a sore subject in that regard, I feel. But cool that he was there taking in the Battle of the Bulls. So then next to go with a stunner from the top rope was the Mac taking out Jeremiah Crane. And then Matt Stryker was putting out there a scenario, which you and I think had sort of touched on. I'm not sure if it made the episode, but at least off the air, that if Mac wins and Sexy Star wins, it'd be friend versus friend. And if PJ Black wins, he could just lay down for Mundo if Mundo wins. So there's these two dueling scenarios there, which is why I picked the Mac to win. And before Matt Stryker could sort of even get that out, Mac hit PJ Black with a stunner, and it was over. 1-2-3. Mac is your Battle of the Bulls winner, and El Jefe of this podcast proven correct. What say you? Did you like the direction they went?
Listen, I mean, I constantly underestimate the Mac, and there's nothing wrong with him winning the match. It's not what I would have done. It's not who I would have picked. But, I mean, it is what it is. Kudos to you for your pick. I'm glad that the Darewolf didn't win, because I don't think PJ Black would roll over for Mundo. And if Mundo remains champion after this match later tonight with Sexy Star, I think that could have spelled the end of the Worldwide Underground. So maybe it's better that that didn't happen.
I think PJ Black would have laid down for Mundo.
I don't think. No, PJ Black is an opportunist. I think there's a reason why he screwed over Jack Evans. And I think he would try to take a cheap shot at Mundo.
Interesting. All right. Well, that remains to be seen because he did not win the match. So moving.
Yeah, you know what? Best not to even go down that road.
I guess not. Moving on from there, we got one of my favorite vignettes from the episode here and from the season, because we're getting more Snake Tribe, which I'm enjoying. We got some lore, and we got a little bit of a revisitation for something that we've been talking about for a while. But it started off on a weird note. I will say that. We got Aerostar and Phoenix looking for Drago in the bathroom.
Search for Drago.
What does that say? I mean, the whole fire in your belly thing, I guess, leads to some gastrointestinal issues or what?
Takes massive dragon dumps. I don't know.
That is a big pile of shit. but yeah, so they were looking for him just to...
I like that they had to search each stall together. It's not even like they could split up in the bathroom.
Dude, what,
and
what,
they were, like, genuinely perplexed that he was not in any of the stalls.
You know what I honestly thought was going to happen, which is why I thought they were doing it, is, first of all, yes, I agree that it is a little ridiculous, but maybe they thought a snake man was going to pop out of them. I thought they were going to find the entrance to the snake lair in one of those stalls. I thought that's what was going to happen.
Like Chamber of Secrets.
Yes. But that is not what happened. I also thought that Vinny Massaro should have been in one of those stalls, probably eating a slice of pizza as well. But
he's ruined all those other snake vignettes. Why not this one?
I thought he would be in there just for continuity's sake, but he was not. But while they were searching, Cobra Moon showed up, not in her queen garb, in what I call her henchman garb, as you pointed out that she would be suited for that role. But she is the queen of the snake tribe.
I see her as like a snake charmer, is how I'll... referred to. I mean, she is a snake, but then at the same time, a snake charmer.
All right.
So I guess that's why she's got the leadership position.
So she showed up basically like, hey, you fools looking for Drago in the toilet there. And
I don't like these unisex bathrooms.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the way of the future. But that's when, you know, she said that she is with the snake tribe now. And that is when Aerostar. And I do feel like this is a callback to what we saw from him in season two when it was back in time and uniting the tribes and all that. Is that
Warmaster.
Dude, he dropped some lore that Drago made a vow a millennia ago.
Never rejoin the reptiles.
Yes. Oh, that was so awesome. What did you think?
I like that. I know that you like Aerostar, but I kind of don't understand how Aerostar is not your favorite character. When he's the only one who really drops the lore like this.
I mean, you know, it's just...
Because his knowledge of the lore is better than anybody else's. Because he has no business knowing about some of these things. That's him just knowing the lore.
Look, I'm not sure that I'm not Aerostar, and I just haven't become him yet. Or, you know, maybe I'm suffering from some sort of amnesia.
I love his look, and I love his mask, though.
I do, too.
I think he's great.
And I think had I known, or listen, Pentagon got me at an early time. Pentagon and Drago got me very, and Mil Muertes got me very early in Lucha. But Pentagon mainly, like, he like zoomed right into my heart as a number one. And Aerostar in season one was very much so future man, like, you know, from space. So I did not
kick
know.
Kick Drago's ass.
I did not That's know. All right. I did not know that Aerostar would become the lore master that he is today. So I really, you know, perhaps if things were different, maybe
it
would
be. Should have been dropping lore season one.
Yeah, exactly. He should have been right out of the gate. I mean, look, and I still like Aerostar very much, but and I appreciate his role in doing that. Anyway, him dropping that about Drago and his vow and everything just tickled me greatly, because I do feel like it is our first significant tie back to what we thought maybe they would never revisit. So I was into that. Believe it or not, there was more to this vignette than just Aerostar pleasing me with lore being dropped. Pindar and Vibra showed back up again, and along with Cobra Moon, proceed to kick the crap out of Aerostar and Phoenix, albeit it was not a fair fight. What did you think of this? Because I thought this was a great freaking vignette.
Yeah, this was the vignette I was talking about that I loved so much. I thought the fight scene was great. When I watched it yesterday, I thought that they had gotten their asses kicked immediately. When I watched it again, dude, Aerostar held his own for a really long time.
Yeah.
I mean, by the end of it, Phoenix and Aerostar were both decimated. But, I mean, that's what I would expect. They were dropped on, and they were outnumbered.
Yeah, this was another one of those moments, too, where, yeah, I liked how long Aerostar lasted. Phoenix put up a good fight, too, and it was one of those things,
yeah,
too,
is
where I was like, man, they got to start featuring Phoenix more again, because it's been too long without him being in a major storyline, and he is such a big part of Lucha Underground and really is one of their top baby faces. So I was watching him. I was like, man, Phoenix is great. So
this is a cool story that they're involved in now, too.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm super stoked on that. Vibra rocks a duster, the best that we've seen this side of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And I like the Snake Tribe logo on the back.
A big muscular dude with no shirt underneath the duster. It works.
It does. It plays, man. It plays. The sound effects that they sort of put with Pindar and Vibra every time they were sort of on the attack and everything. It's just, this was a great fight scene. Yeah, just awesome stuff. Very well done by Lucha Underground here. Definitely one of the reasons why I love Lucha, one of my why I love Lucha moments. God, the lore. Gotta love it. we went from there. Actually, Cobra Moon then, you know, basically said, what'd she say? The next time it will be Drago, you know, breaking you. So alluding to that she's going to bend Drago to her will. And then we get another vignette. We get Sexy Star and the Mac in the locker room. And Jeff, you and I both recognize immediately. I mean, I think Sexy Star is delightful, but just how she shouts so jubilantly, Mac, you know, how excited she is that he won. I don't know. I loved it. What did you think of this vignette?
I liked it fine. They really are just good friends. And it was
friend-zoned.
Kind of poor bastard.
I like how he proceeded to explain himself, you know, just like his whole backstory, essentially,
in one
sentence.
For those of us who aren't as familiar with the Mac, and also maybe to try to win a few of us over who weren't sold on the Mac. It's like, you know what? Yeah, he's just a kid down and out from South Central. Maybe I should have been supporting him all along.
And Sexy's a really good friend. You know, she's really proud of her buddy, and will happily defend her championship.
Maybe that's why you're into the Mac so much.
I just picked him as a winner. I like the Mac, and I've shared a brew and some food with him at a Buffalo Wild Wings. So there is, I got love for the Mac. But yeah, he was super friend-zoned.
There was a tarantula on the floor again.
Yes, and I ask you again, are we going to get a Spider Tribe?
Oh God, I hope not. Wait, all right. What, are there just seven tribes, and how many of them have been named?
Well, let's try and list them off here. We got the Eagle Tribe, which you apparently were blissfully unaware of.
I know, and now I'm really happy about it. We got the Snake Tribe, the Rabbit Tribe, the Moth Tribe.
The Jaguar Tribe that Prince Puma's a part of?
And also there would have to be a Jaguar Tribe, even if they haven't talked about it yet.
Yeah, and then I think, so we're missing a couple there.
Yeah, we're missing two.
The Silver Snakes and the Purple Parrots.
And Octopus. And it's like the Octopon logo from Pirates of Dark Water.
Or I was thinking maybe the like the Masters of Evil, the Hydra logo or whatever.
I could see that, yeah.
But yeah, so we still have some more to come here. So
and a tarantula would make sense. Oh, I hope not.
I think there's a Spider Tribe coming. Maybe that's the tribe that Pentagon would be a part of too, because all those limbs to break. I don't know.
Yeah. How come they don't like Sexy Star?
we don't know what's coming, but it's I think clearly as we see
the
what
tarantulas happened, are actually protecting her.
No,
she doesn't know it.
No, definitely not. Although, you know, spiders do get kind of a bad rap.
Yeah, they're good.
I just hate them, like you. I hate them, Jock. I hate them.
Well, that's because fear leads to hate.
Yes. Well, let's leave that right there. But no, that was a perfectly fine little buildup, just showing the friendship of Sexy Star and the Mac playing off what could happen. What?
No, just their friendship. You're right.
Yeah. No, it was perfectly fine. I loved how excited she was to see him and just everything there. It is from there that we go to yet another. This was some heavy vignette action because we did
back
only
to back to back.
Yeah, we did only have two matches on this episode, and this was my other favorite vignette, and in some ways I liked it even more than the first one. We got Dario and Jeremiah in his office. Jeremiah asking for a match, and Dario just, again, very bluntly, it's like, yeah, you know, you showed me something last week, but tonight you got your ass kicked, so why would I even make this match? Just hilariously truthful, like how he was with Chavo and everything. He pulls no punches. I love that. And he agrees to make the match, which we are not told who it is with at this point. And then he starts poking around in Dario's office in the ceiling boards. And Dario's
like,
"What
are you still doing here, bro?"
Yeah, what are you doing? He's like, "I left this here when I was a kid," and he proceeds to pull out a Ouija board of sorts and leaves Dario's office. And I'm sitting there watching, be like, "Left this here as a kid." I was like, "Holy crap!" Like a whole nother layer level with Jeremiah Crane at this point in time, and I just. I was like, where is this going? And, you know, the whole Ouija board thing. And then he sees Katrina appear, appear in front of him in the hallway. And he starts talking to her about how, how he's challenging Mil Muertes and how he's going to wish that he was never brought back from the dead. And then, I mean, poor Ivelisse, but he says that Katrina will be all his. What did you think of this vignette and the whole storyline turns with Jeremiah and Katrina? Because I'm loving this. This is not what I saw coming.
I thought it was cool. Not what I saw coming either. Also, do we know how old Katrina is? Like, was it ever specified how old she is, or have we just speculated that she's very old?
She has said how...
she has said it?
We know a certain number of at least of years that she has been alive. Because she's talked about how many hundreds of years she's waited for certain moments and stuff like that.
Oh, that's true.
Also the vignette with the amulet, we don't know which girl that actually was, whether it was Captain Vasquez or Katrina back in the day.
Yeah, but wasn't it Captain Vasquez who was kind of sitting there and
thinking? But a plot twist would not be new to wrestling or good television. And that girl with the amulet, was, you know, sort of reluctant in picking up what her dad was dropping as he expired, too. But we know Katrina is very old. And the whole thing I was thinking is that that must be how he used to summon her back in the day when he was a kid, which I just think is so cool. I love that concept.
Can you imagine having a imaginary friend like Katrina when you were a kid?
I would never leave the house.
Exactly. So either that or... this is her current host body, and he knew the mortal Katrina when she was a child, too. And who knows what they had summoned with the Ouija board that's now in that body.
They'd both have to be extremely old. So maybe that is...
No, wait, no, because maybe that's not really the person that he knew anymore. Maybe that's really the demon or something that he summoned. But
I see what you're saying.
Mortal
they
frame,
possess.
Yeah, was his, like, childhood friend or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely could be it. We'll find out, hopefully. His storyline and their storyline together is not one that I at all anticipated, and it's continually to just these were turns that I did not think that we were going to go down, and I'm really enjoying it. When Crane burst on the scene, I thought he was just going to be generic fighting douche boyfriend, and he has been anything but that. He has been awesome, so... he's had quite the run. I can't wait to see more from this story because he's still got part of the stone around his neck. Now he's got the Ouija board. Seeing how all this ties together, I am extremely interested in this. I can't wait.
Yeah, I feel we just have more questions than answers at this point. So,
and that's okay because we're just getting started.
No, that's fine because, yeah, we've got a long way to go as far as the story goes. So, yeah, let's keep unraveling it little by little. And I think more will come out next week when the two of them actually have their match.
Now, what did you think when he said that Katrina would be all hers? Because when I first watched it, I was like, oh, he wants her, like, sexually or, you know, to, like, be with her. But then I thought about, you know, then maybe Mil Muertes isn't there to protect her. Maybe he wants to banish her somehow. I don't know. Is that why he wanted the Ouija board? Just thoughts. What do you think?
Well, if that's the case, then all the more reason that it could be something that's occupying that host body. Mm-hmm. He's trying to free his friend. Or he's hoping to be granted power through Katrina. And so whatever strength she gives to Mil Muertes, she would give to him instead.
Yeah. It's just not right to be playing around those sort of Ouija boards and stuff. Could only lead to bad things.
That's what I'm told. That's why I stay away from them.
But I think
if it summons Katrina's, I'll rethink it.
Yeah, I certainly would, too. I would not listen. He summoned her all that whole time when he was living in the last house on the left. I'm fascinated.
It's not the movie I remember.
Like, I love horror stuff, and so, like, all these things are just right up my alley right now with the two of them. This was fantastic to me. I did not expect that. Didn't see it coming. Super stoked on that. It is from there that we got the main event, though. Sexy Star versus Johnny Mundo in the cage. We got Mundo coming out to Welcome to Slamtown, which we talked about earlier. Did you notice that this time?
That I did. Not.
You did
because
not?
Because I didn't watch the video yet.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Right from the get-go, we got Mundo spitting on Sexy Star, just the disrespect. We got that pose down between them, which I thought was great. What did you overall think of the match, though?
I thought this was their best match yet.
Agreed, completely.
Man, she's got some big arms.
She does. She's very tough. She's strong. Muy fuerte, that sexy star. Yeah, she is.
Yeah.
I thought Johnny Mundo's brutality in this was very good too, because he rocked Sexy in a lot of parts when he was great in her face on the cage. But I thought the thing that really stood out to me is when he had her up on his shoulders and he was just battering ramming her face into each side of the cage. I thought that was really rough to watch, but really fit with
that
the aggression.
Yeah, that, and when he just like flat out dropped her behind the ropes and then was just leaning against the ropes, and then those punches at the very end when they were both on the cage, they just looked fierce. And I mean, his size versus her size, and I mean, you know, it's all equal in the temple, but you know, still a man versus a woman. You know, just psychologically what that does to you when you watch it. I mean, it seemed like he was just beating her down a lot. But, I mean, it's not that she wasn't on the offensive. I liked a lot of the things she did against him. I liked when she just kept kicking him when he was on the ground and he was, like, rolling away from her.
Yeah, I liked that, too.
I liked a lot of her slaps. I liked when he landed on his nuts on the rope.
Yeah, I liked that, too. I had to massage his Mundos.
Get the boost.
I like that, and I liked her doing a Sexy Star Does Spider-Man kind of deal, which Matt Stryker called out on commentary. Her balancing on the ropes and everything, I thought that was cool.
The chase on the rope, yeah, that was good, because they went like a whole length of the ring.
Yeah, that was very cool. And then, you know, I knew it was a moment that was going to cost her, but her jumping off the top of the cage was a pretty rad moment to see. But Mundo did kick out of the crossbody off the top.
Yeah, she could have won the match, but it was awesome to see that.
Yeah, she should have gone for the title. I knew then. I was like, probably not going to be Sexy Star's night at this point. But the way they finished this match, which I talked about at the top of the show, is one of the more perfect endings that you can have in a match that keeps both characters preserved. So no one got hurt by the loss, and Johnny Mundo's character is accentuated by this win. It was one of the most dick heel moves ever. Johnny Mundo undid Sexy Star's mask and threw it to the mat, and she had to hide her face and jump down to get it, allowing Mundo to escape. What did you think of the finish? Because, I just very creative, perfect stuff.
I could not think of a better finish for this match. It really just pushes his heel character over the top. I also like it because since Mundo is an American, he can be the kind of heel that also completely disrespects the entire history and integrity of the lucha sport. And I think that's a great way for his character to be portrayed. And I thought it was great because it was a way to cheat, but it was different than just having his friends help him like in the past.
Yeah.
I thought it was real sneaky and underhanded, but at the same time.
Yeah, because they were banned from ringside,
yeah,
too. Effect,
yeah, they were banned from ringside, so it was up to him to do it his way. And I thought it was a good way to do it. And it's not that he wasn't dominant in parts of the match, so I didn't feel that, you know, he wasn't shown to his fullest ability. And I thought all of it fit appropriately.
Yeah, it was too good, man. It was another thing. I was like, it didn't even cross my mind. And when I saw it happen, I was like, man, what a dick.
Yeah, he's just a dick. And I liked him like on the stairs getting into it with the audience.
Yeah.
The screaming back and forth. I thought that was just perfect. Yeah, Mundo's that kind of a scumbag and can be. So I thought it was just outstanding.
I loved Matt Stryker on commentary too, getting so frustrated. He's like, you know, whatever, like it's legal, but it was a bitch way to win. And exactly. And Vampiro looking at him, he's like, I agree with you. And just it was they really sold it well. And then Mac went on the attack on the top of the stairs to close out the in-ring action of the show. But we were not done because we had one more vignette, and that was what I've been wanting to see all episode was Cobra Moon's Snake Tribe throne room yet again. And we get what we saw in the trailer, which was Drago in chains. Cobra Moon taunting him, basically saying that, you know, she was going to let him have some scraps of Pindar's meal. But Drago essentially saying he'd rather starve. And her saying that, you know, a dragon needs to feed eventually. And then the fireball from Drago. What did you think of this? I just, oh, so great. Great way to close out the show, I thought.
I just thought it was fun. I really liked it. I hope that they're having a fun time filming it. Because it's so different than everything else. I would love to see Drago be forced to come out in a match chained up.
Yeah, and I hope so too.
Have to, I guess, like represent the Snake Tribe against somebody or something like that. I think that would be really cool. Not necessarily against Aerostar and Phoenix yet, but like against a neutral opponent.
I think without being able to give his side of the story, he's going to disappoint poor Aerostar at some point in the near future here that he has broken his vow.
Don't worry, and then Aerostar and Phoenix will help him out, and the super friends will prevail at the end.
I hope so, man. But that was great stuff. The more we talked about it, the more, I mean, it was such a vignette-heavy episode, but very much so needed, advanced some very cool plot lines. Great episode of Lucha Underground this week. Can't wait for next week, as always. But that is going to do it for the Lucha Lowdown. For Jeff Budd, I'm James Kincaid. Good night, everybody.